Rural Focus around regional WA. Your voice of agriculture.
Hello and welcome to the Rural Focus podcast. My name is Troy Stockton. It's lovely to be having your company this morning and thanks for choosing the Rural Focus podcast on the Listener app, LISTNR. Here, covering things agricultural and rural issues, not just for WA, but Australia-wide. Plenty of things happening. Of course, we're all getting ready for a bumper harvest. And coming up on today's show, speaking of a bumper harvest, we're going to catch up with Dennis. He's one of the analysts at Rabobank, and they've given Australian farmers a bit of a golden outlook with the harvest not too far away. Also, too, we'll catch up with Wayne Mitchell, speak gate to plate. We'll chat with Aidan from the WA Cancer Council, the month of October, Breast Cancer Awareness Week, not just for ladies, but for the gents as well. Catch up with Harry Carroll from Nutrient. And first off today, catch up with a man who loves to have a chat about all things agriculture, the one and only Stu McKenzie. And I started by asking Stu, well, over the weekend, the Nationals, the Federal Nationals, to decide on net zero by 2050.
Quote our Nationals leader and Deputy Prime Minister, Barnaby Joyce. We agree in principle.
Yeah.
In principle here, ladies and gentlemen, that is the key word. Look, this is going to be interesting. And look, net zero by 2050. Although the principles behind it are fantastic, I guess at local level, at state level here in WA, this is not great news for regional WA. And that has been, that this has come out through WA Farmers and a few others as well. So this is not great news for us, but what it does mean is obviously they're going to be looking at other energy sources.
Yep.
Nuclear is obviously back on the table as one of those.
Yep.
Now, it's not a scary term anymore, nuclear power. I think we've come a long way since Chernobyl, to quote somebody else that I heard on the radio this morning, when you've got our submarines and our ships and stuff all going nuclear power for the longevity of it. You know, it's not a bad way to go. Yes, coal power is on its way out. What it will do for regional WA is supply us with more EV charging stations so we can make sure our new electric powered vehicles can do more than 400 k's. Good luck driving to Perth to Albany or Perth to Esperance. You'll have to stop and charge halfway. It's net zero by 2050. Let's just see where this goes from here. It's agreed for in principle. I do know that from the National Party at WA level, they're still trying to digest what it means for us.
Yep.
I do know that at Canberra, one of the reasons or some of the reasons for agreeing in principle now is because it allows them, or they're going to be pushing for an extra MP at the big table in Canberra. So once again, although it's not great for regional WA, it will help in the long run with that coalition government. The comment was also made this morning that, you know, the Nationals have typically been a little bit conservative. Mm. Just because the Nationals have been conservative doesn't mean we don't get there in the end. So the National Party still gets there, but they just like to digest the information a little bit further rather than just going, yes, no, bang, bang, bang. So let's just see how this pans out over the next kind of, you know, 2 to 4 weeks, I reckon. So we'll go from there.
And I suppose on the other hand too, is this trying to make Scott Morrison look pretty good before he goes over to Glasgow?
Absolutely. It's about making ScoMo look great in a kilt.
Yep. Well, somebody has to.
Yeah, well, no one else is going. Just don't ask what he's wearing underneath it. So look, I guess this is about ScoMo being able to fly to Glasgow next week and make sure that he has got Australia's best interests at heart, and to make sure that all parties in principle agree to what's been put on the table by government. So let's just play that one out. The next big one, and this is purely for WA at the moment, is this electoral reform.
Yep.
Now, I've been speaking to a couple of MPs and pollies over the last few days, and this is a really good point. Electoral reform, 3.5 years before the next election, despite having no mandate to push it through. And it's already been pushed into the Legislative Council. So it's already in the upper house. What this means is for the 5% of WA, which is regional voters, it's going to remove our voice in the city. Keep in mind, this is 3.5 years before the next election. So number one, it's not mandated. That's the big thing here. There's no mandate to push this through, and they're pushing it through 3.5 years because they know that come the next election, if the pressure is put on, Nationals have already got a pretty big base. And this Liberal National or National Liberal coalition government can only get bigger. Does that mean that We're going to see a turn at the next election, probably not this one, but maybe the next one after that. But at the end of the day, this is still 3.5 years, well and truly, before it's due. So all I can say to our brothers and sisters in regional WA, get on to your pollies, get on to your MPs and start putting pressure on them, because this is not mandated. So therefore, it can still be turned over. And it's well and truly, you know, well and truly too early for this.
Yeah.
We're going to lose our voice outside of Perth, and that's just as simple and as blunt as it can get.
Yep, not looking too good. So, yes, but as Stu did say, yeah, get on to your local poly today. Now, mate, before you go, summer weed control, that should be just about ready to start, really, wouldn't it?
Yeah, so let's get back to the original point of this discussion that we started on Rural Focus over a year ago now, with a little bit of agronomy and a little bit of ag industry, a little bit of politics all thrown in. So, look, with harvest starting, and look, I have had a text message from John Hassell at WA Farmers. You know, there's some good news stories around with the frosted wheat, frosted barley story going on. There's some good news. There's some bad news, some not great stories as well. But yep. At the end of the day, a lot of the harvest averages are up, which is fantastic. Canola yields are good so far, and oil content and proteins have been right up there.
Okay.
So as we go through this, we start talking summer spraying already, because that summer weed control, particularly in that canola rotation, becomes a really, really big thing. This also leads to pasture manipulation. Just because we're in the headers now, don't forget about your livestock. They're still an incredible part, an integral part of the farming system, particularly because they're still worth a whole lot of money. And Troy, your conversations through Mouchet and the other sale, the other stock sales are proving that. Don't forget your livestock, ladies and gents. So just because you've got the sprayer out, maybe you should do some of that as well. So making sure that you've got the correct chemistry on farm, making sure that you're liaising with your agro regularly just to make sure that your rates are right. And keep in mind that we've got hot, we've got cold, we've got windy, we've got dry, we've got all sorts of weather conditions. So make sure that you're spraying in the right conditions to get the best result moving forward. So rather than having to do 4 or 5 passes over summer, you're only going to have to do 2 or 3. So make sure that you are constantly driving those paddocks, walking those paddocks. Get your agro on farm. This is not time for our agros to start relaxing. This is when we should be getting busiest. Right. And also, while you're out there, let's get some soil testing done as well. So there's a lot to cover off on, but please, soil test. Make sure your spray quality is good, your water quality is good, and make sure you're using the right chemical at the right place at the right time to do the best possible job we can moving into 2022.
Rural Focus. Around regional WA. Your voice of agriculture.
Well, it's always great to catch up with Harry Carroll from Nutrient. We always check in with Harry to see how the cattle sales at Mount Barker do go. Harry, hello to you. How did we go last Thursday?
Oh, Mount Barker sale last Thursday, 1,140 cattle offered in a very, very, very good quality yarding last Thursday, and the Nutrient team offered 640 of these. So another good day, a lot of very good yielding steers and heifers offered, a very good run of yielding heifers in that 400 to 500 kilo bracket, showing great condition after a really good spring east of Albany. They sold particularly well. Good run of new season weaners. Not much weight in them yet, but
yep.
There's plenty of demand about for those. And a bigger yarding of cows and bulls this week. As I mentioned, the previous week it was only quite small. But look, the market throughout was very, very strong. There were some serious gains in the feeder sector. The grain feeders have just started to move into the market now and start sourcing their needs for the coming season. So they've added some energy into the market. There's some eastern states activity there also on Thursday. So if you're in the business of wanting to sell some cattle in the future, you can start pretty much any time you like, because there's plenty of energy there and the demand won't go away, Troy.
All right.
Go away.
Yeah, fantastic. Harry, I wanted to ask you this morning, how much impact would this rising fertiliser price have on the livestock market?
Well, that's a really good question, Troy. And I think it's agriculture more broadly, and I don't think anybody's exempt from it. You know, and we talked to people in the cropping business, but certainly the livestock, because you know, most of the guys in the livestock business, especially on the coast and the southwest, and you know, it's fairly intense what they do, and their fertilizer inputs are quite high. High inputs, high output. So it's going to impact. Nothing comes without a cost, and cost of production of beef is just one of those. So, yeah, it's going to be challenging, and you know, every roll of hay or silage that gets produced next year will have a different cost to it versus this year. So it will have an impact right throughout. But having said all that, yep. You know, livestock prices, whether they're sheep or whether they're whether they're cattle, are as good as any of us can remember ever seeing. So there's still money, good money to be made for all.
Rural Focus around regional WA, your voice of agriculture.
Rabobank agricultural analyst Dennis Voznesenski does join us. Have I got that right? Otherwise, Dennis will probably hang up very soon. Mate, good morning.
Hi, Troy. How are you doing?
Well, we all over here, well, not saying we, but the farmers over here in WA have been saying that we're in for a bumper harvest. So it looks like we're pretty well right.
Yeah, exactly. So overall, nationally, we're close to 53 million tonnes. And that's slightly down on last year in terms of tonnage. But if you compare it to the five-year average, that's 25% up. And more importantly, you know, looking at tonnage is one thing, but you also have to look at how prices play into it. And if you go, okay, what's the dollar value of production? Mm. We're almost at $20 billion in terms of the winter crop, and that's a record. And you mentioned Western Australia, and there we're actually seeing a record crop, so 19.8 million tonnes. So there's a few records this year, including canola, actually, which is 5.2 million tonnes this year, another record nationally.
Yeah, I was going to say, canola probably the standout so far.
Yeah. No matter where you look around Australia, everyone was planting canola this year. One, because, you know, canola prices were great. And two, because they were planting less barley if the seasonal conditions of their area are allowed. Because, you know, obviously because of China, no one's as optimistic about barley these days.
I was going to say, as you say, barley production down slightly. Is that some sort of concern for our farmers?
No, it's down, but not for it would be a concern if it was due to seasonal conditions or whatnot. But it's because at planting, farmers were concerned about, you know, where is this barley going to go? Is there going to be an end customer? There is an end customer, but China's no longer there, and they were just thinking, all right, I probably won't get that premium that we typically would for sending it to China, so we'll plant a bit less.
So what were some of the major factors, a part of your report?
The fact that we have a, you know, almost another record crop. You know, it's actually the first two-year period where we're producing, in two consecutive years, over 100 million tonnes of grain, which is a bit of an interesting standalone fact in its own. But in terms of the total crop, it's looking really good. Exports are actually going to be higher than last year, around 5% higher. And you might think, oh, well, why are exports going to be a little bit higher if production is lower? Well, last year, the majority of the country was coming out of a drought, especially in the East Coast, and stocks had to be rebuilt. Whereas this year, we already have high stocks from last year, and there's another really good crop. So exports are going to be going up, especially for wheat and canola.
Year on year, have I got this right, that WA is around about, what, 18, 19%?
Yeah, 18% higher. And that's actually coincidentally also the amount that Queensland's high. They finally got some rain after a long time, which is good for them.
Well, I think here in WA, I think we've had too much rain, I think, mate. But, well, in some parts of regional WA anyway. But we'll just have to wait and see because, well, some of the farmers haven't started to harvest just yet, but I reckon they're just about ready to head on out and about. So that's fantastic to be up that 18%.
Yeah, it's really good. And there's some other, like, interesting factors. So canola is obviously one where it always grabs the headlines. But another interesting one is that in Canada, yes, it was a drought and it caused lower canola production, but it also caused lower high-protein wheat production. Yeah. And then we saw in Europe at harvest, there was a lot of rainfall and it caused a downgrade in wheat. So they didn't have as much high-protein wheat either. So there's a shortage globally for that. Okay. And this year, based on our analysis, there's around a 6% increase in production of high-protein wheat in Australia, which means we're producing what the world needs at a really opportune time.
All right. Now, speaking of wheat, as you say, low world stocks, but we've still got high levels.
High levels of production locally, you mean?
Yeah, yes.
Yeah, so that's exactly. It's another situation where it's perfect for Australia because the world is in short supply of wheat. Prices are high and we can supply it. We're one of the few suppliers who has a large crop compared to historic levels. And we talked a little bit about prices in the beginning. Prices look pretty favorable for no matter where you look. Of course, it depends which commodity you focus in on. So wheat looks pretty positive. Barley, well, one of the things you have to keep in mind is this year it's really good and last year is really good, despite having the China issue. And that's because feed demand globally is really high. This is not enough of it. But if, say, we get into a year where crop production in South America and North America, if corn production goes up, or, for example, Southeast Asia, who's been buying our barley, starts buying corn instead, well, where are we going to send our barley? And that's going to, prices would have to decline. The last one is canola. And this is what the conversation started off with, $1,000 per ton, crazy numbers. And obviously those numbers aren't really natural, typical prices for canola. And as we move halfway through next year, there's going to be new harvests coming online in Europe and in Canada. And, you know, we wouldn't be expecting those types of prices to stick around.
We'll just work on this year's at this moment, mate, and see how we go, eh?
Yes, exactly.
Hey, Dennis, thanks for your time today, mate. Now, if people are wanting to read your report, can they read it anywhere?
So on the Rabo Research Food and Agribusiness website.
Hey, mate, thanks for your time today. Have a great day, have a great week, and hopefully we can chat again with you soon.
Talk soon, Trey.
Rural Focus on Triple M.
Well, gate to plate. Here we'll be back in the brand new year. Looking forward to being a part of this for 2022. And from gate to plate, we catch up today with Wayne Mitchell. Wayne, hello there to you.
Morning, Troy. How are you?
Not too bad, mate. Well, I believe, entries are now being taken for gate to plate.
Yes, that's right, Troy. We're on again. We're into our 8th year of the challenge, and nominations are now open and will run through to the 8th of November.
All right, so go along, challenge your herd, challenge yourself. The 2022 Harvey Beef Gate to Plate Challenger, as Wayne mentioned, entries are open. Is there a cost to this?
Yes, Troy, there's a nomination cost, which this year will be $1,840-odd, which covers the total feeding cost of your three animals, transport, associated costs with, you know, processing of the animals, etc.
Yeah.
As well as your seats at the presentation dinner. Yeah, which is a great event, a great chance for like-minded producers to get together. But with that nomination, Troy, through funding from one of our gold sponsors, Elders, you only require to pay $500 initially. The rest is carried by Elders and taken out of the proceeds at when the cattle are processed.
All right, fantastic. So be a part of it. If you are wanting to know more, the website, gatetoplatechallenge.com.au. Wankin, for those people who are unsure, maybe listening for the first time, what are your main objectives, a part of Gate to Plate?
Troy, it come about with, we sort of thought that, you know, there's a lot of people producing cattle that not necessarily aware of what happens after after they sell them or whatever. So it was a bit of an insight into the feedlot industry, which a lot of people aren't involved with, obviously. It's a great opportunity. We've got a big diversification of crosses of cattle coming through now, so it's a great showcase for some of the breeds to just show what they can do through the whole process. Yeah, hence the gate to plate, because, you know, you started, you've bred them, someone's fed them for you, they go through and process, and you're getting valuable data on the whole way through.
And the good thing about this too, Wayne, is that plenty of the schools get involved as well.
Yeah, that's a great aspect of it, and Coles Supermarkets are our major sponsor of the schools portion of the challenge, and it runs our major field day in March. The second day is the schools are there and do some cattle assessment and hands-on stuff, and yeah, it's a very big part of the challenge too, and, you know, with the future of the industry, to involve those kids.
Certainly. Now, what did you say? It's into its 8th year, is that right?
Yes, yeah, that's right, Troy. Wow,
fantastic. And it just keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger. We are chatting with Wayne Mitchell about the Gate to Plate Challenge. This couldn't happen, mate, without your wonderful sponsors.
Yeah, that's right, Troy. And we've got a big list of sponsors and that, but right at the top is our naming sponsor, Harvey Beef, which have been with us right from the word go, and tremendous supporters of our competition and, as we know, the beef industry in the state. Sitting under them as a Bendigo Bank, they haven't been with us that many years. They're a more recent sponsor, but they're a diamond sponsor. And then our gold sponsors are Datamars, which supply our ear tags and do all that sort of stuff. Coles, as we mentioned, Nutrium, Mount Barker Sale Yards, which hold the induction of the cattle and that sort of thing, and of course Elders that do the finance part and the processing. So, and then under that we have a whole host of supporters and other sponsors, which all, not all out of the cattle industry either, like fairly diverse range of sponsors.
All right. So if people are wanting to know more about the Gate to Play Challenge, I'm guessing the website's a pretty good start, Wayne?
Yeah, that's a very good start. You'll find all your information there. And if not, you could call our coordinator, which is Narelle Lyon, and she's at admin@gatetoplay.com.au. Or, you'll find contact numbers on the website for Narelle.
All right, so there you go. So the Gate to Plate Challenge, the 2022 Harvey Beef Gate to Plate Challenge entries open right now, and they will stay open until around about 5 o'clock on Monday, the 8th of November. So you've got a couple of Mondays to get your entries in and be a part of the 2022 Harvey Beef Gate to Plate Challenge. Wayne Mitchell, hey mate, nice to chat. We'll hopefully do it again soon.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Troy.
Well, that's it for today's podcast. Hopefully you've enjoyed the first four rural-focused podcasts. We'll be back to do it all again tomorrow. But for more of the show, of course, you can catch us on Triple M from 9 o'clock weekday mornings.